Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Good afternoon. This is the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio News Program, and I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. My guest today is a new one. Although we have enjoyed other guests from the Heifetz International Music Institute, such as Benjamin K. Rowe, the president and CEO, and Nick Kitchen, its artistic director, and even Daniel Heifetz, its founder. But today, we are most happy to welcome a new Reasonable Voice from the Heifetz International Music Institute, Andrew Green, the development and marketing manager. Welcome, Andrew, to the Reasonable Voices radio program. How are you?
I'm great, Marcello. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Listen, you know, there's so much to talk about, especially when we have a brand new guest. Just a quick thing about, just to remind folks who may have forgotten, the mission statement, or at least part of it. The mission statement of the Heifetz International Music Institute is to develop the expressive potential of every performer through the innovative and cross-disciplinary Heifetz performance and communication training. The Institute teaches musicians to communicate the emotion of music beyond mere technical agility and beautiful playing to explore their creative potential. Now, I particularly love that because as all my friends, which you will soon be from Heifetz, know that I am a director from New York. I direct a lot of musicals, and to me, as I used to say to all my opera folks long before they put opera on TV, you can't just stand there and sing. It has to feel and mean something. So that's why I love the Heifetz. And now, Andrew, where do we begin with you? Where are you from, and what brings you here, and how long have you been here?
Well, I started with the Institute just back in December, so I'm coming up to my first actual concert and festival and Institute season this coming June. We'll kick off on June 29th. So as much as I've been kind of learning the culture and all the, you know, the wonderful sort of back workings of the Institute and seeing how the sausage is made, so to speak, I've only barely dipped my toe in the water of really what makes the Institute so special, which is that emphasis on these extraordinary performances by these young musicians. Mm. So while the heart of the Institute is during that summer season, we do some year-round programming as well, mm-hmm. through our Heifetz on Tour programs. And so I've been able to be a part of a few of those that we've done, including a 12-hour Bach program that we put on in Stanton, where we're located, back in March, as well as a couple of other events. So, you know, after getting myself up to speed a little bit on the Institute over those first few months and wrapping my head around it, it was when I finally experienced those first performances firsthand, mm-hmm. that I said, oh, they're on to something here. I landed in sort of a special spot with this organization. And so my background, I grew up in New York City, and I've been working in the music industry for over a decade now, in all sorts of different capacities, from being a touring musician myself and songwriter to handling booking and management and PR for different bands, as well as acts that I've been a part of. I've always just sort of veered back and forth between kind of the artist side and the management side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the nature of being an independent artist, as I was, and more in the kind of folk and Americana, blues and jazz world. You sort of just have to learn everything on the fly and just, you know, you got to figure it out yourself. No one else is really going to do it for you. But I've always enjoyed aspects of that work as well. So it wasn't like a total chore.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that balance between doing that work in addition to the artistic work, it could be a difficult one to strike. And I moved to Central Virginia, just a little bit east of Stanton, where the Institute is located. Moved down there from New York about 7 years ago now, and just came across this opportunity, this job posting, back last fall, and met with the staff, the administrative staff at HIFITS, and just seemed like a great fit. And really what has made the transition great for me into the classical music world, which frankly is a bit of a new experience for me,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that they kind of take nothing for granted with the way the music is taught and learned and presented. That idea of it first and foremost being an expressive art form at all costs, that could, in some way, I mean, that harkens so closely back to the way I always approach music and the music that I've loved, be it, you know, blues and jazz. And I wouldn't always feel that same intense, and part of this is through my own naivety and inexperience with the medium, but I always, you know, I could feel a little bit of a disconnect there when I was, as much as I love certain, you know, certain composers, certain performers in classical music, once I really started to understand the ethos of what the Institute was about, I realized, you know what, this is all being tapped from the same well as what I love about music.
And exactly.
Music really,
yes.
is close to my heart. And so I think it's mutually beneficial as well, because I can bring a little bit of an outsider's perspective. I didn't come up through the classical music conservatories. I didn't come up through that type of programming. But at the same time, I have quite a bit of experience, everything from, you know, helping to book festivals and booking nationwide tours and doing radio promotions for artists. So at the end of the day, a lot of that kind of management and just administrative work is going to be the same no matter where you're applying it. But
mm-hmm.
I think it's helpful to have had these different experiences to bring to the table as well.
Absolutely. And I love meeting artists who are not only good at their art, but appreciate, of course, the other disciplines of art, but also have a real sense of the business aspect, something of the business of show business, if you will, something that helps us all hold it together. I mean, I was for a while the rehearsal director for back when it was called the American Opera Center at Juilliard. And I was hired specifically because of my background in music. They knew, okay, we want someone who can get it all organized and get the word out, but we also
sure.
want someone who understands the art itself, and you do. And it's quite a compliment. I know all those folks over at HIFITS, and I know that if you are you are their choice, because the job, we should talk a little about that too. I see ads like this all the time, development and marketing manager, and I run very far in the other direction. But you know, because I've done that kind of thing, on the fringes of that anyway, and throughout my career, but it was never by choice, it was out of necessity. So tell us more, what's your day-to-day description, what's your day-to-day agenda as a development and marketing manager in Central Virginia for an institution like the HIFITS International Music Institute?
Well, part of what I love about it is that it is so varied day to day. And, you know, whatever expectation I start a morning with, thinking what the general outline of my day is going to be, it's pretty reliable that it's going to take a hard left turn somewhere in there, and I'm going to completely
yes.
pivot for the next 6 hours and handle some tasks that comes up. But it's truly amazing the amount of work and coordination and preparation that gets done by this institute for such a small administrative team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now that I've kind of peek behind the curtain, and I'm part of the gears that are turning back there. I look around sometimes back in the office. It's like, wow, it's really just basically just the four of us making this whole thing hum. And, you know, that is a testament to just the structure that's been set up between Ben Rowe, as you mentioned before, and our general manager, Jennifer Rowe, and our office administrator and tour manager. And I couldn't even begin to enumerate all the job titles she has. Mm. Anna Brontes just kind of makes the whole thing work. Anything that needs to get done, she seems to be on the spot with it. And then, obviously, you know, having a chance to work in concert with Nicholas Kitchen as well, and just kind of helping to bring his vision for these next phases of the Institute to light. I mean, he came in guns blazing with just a ton of really cool ideas that, again, for me, coming into my first season, I have less of a basis for comparison to how it's worked in the past. And again, not to say any, you know, not to disparage anything that was done before, but it's just any time you're going to bring in a new sort of artistic leader with their own strong vision, there's going to be some changes around the edges. But he and the whole administration just has such a profound respect for everything that's been built up before it by Daniel Heifetz. And I mean, it's just such a strong foundation to build on, that the fact that the core of this training is really just is so rock solid, it allows us to build up these little pieces on the peripheries, bringing in new programs. But the fact that core is in place of this combination of the very intensive high-level instrument training in conjunction with this unique performance and communication training that's so well established, we're able to just roll in new programs into that paradigm, and they're kind of able to take off right from the get-go. You know, 1 or 2 years into bringing in a new initiative, they're kind of self-sufficient and have a great reputation, and the word gets out to students, I mean, truly worldwide. We've got, I believe, the final count for this coming season, we've got students coming from 15 countries internationally. So it's really a testament to the work that's been done over all these years since it was started back in 1996.
Yes, and I'm.
But
gonna,
I don't think I even got to your question of what I do day to day.
That was grand.
I'm
because
just realizing that now.
No, yeah,
you know, the marketing side of it is kind of covers everything from, you know, really staying engaged and up to date with sort of our local area and the local media markets, and you know, we're in Stanton, so we've got some kind of crossover to Charlottesville to the east for some bigger events, and we'll actually be doing some concerts in Charlottesville and in Richmond as well. But then, you know, other markets, Harrisonburg and Lexington, right around us. So just staying engaged with all those folks. You know, in the age of digital media, there's just so many different platforms you've got to get the word out on. So staying coordinated with all that. Another really one of the more exciting things in the early phases of still working on. You know, at the end of the day, you need something interesting to talk about. And from my days working as an independent artist and other independent artists, you know, you want to keep getting this interesting content out. But at the end of the day, it's a group of, you know, whatever it is, 4, 5, 6 people in a band. You're spending most of your time sitting in a van and at gas stations. You know, at night you get to play a show and that's fun. But like, there's only so much exciting news to fabricate, to be perfectly honest. To blow up the popular conception of the glamorous lifestyle of a touring band. The Heifetz Institute, on the other hand, has this alumni database of 2,000 plus students at this point, most of whom have gone on and are engaged currently in just the most, you know, incredible things, performing all over the world, getting fellowships, parts of, you know, some of the premier ensembles in the world. So we have so many good stories to tell just by tapping into our own alumni database.
Mm-hmm.
It's really mutually beneficial. You know, they're ultimately our best ambassadors, these premier students who have come through the Institute, taken some of the training and really put it to use in their careers. So, you know, in that sense, it makes my job easy. I don't really have to stray too far to find a compelling story to put out there. Mm-hmm. There's just every week we're you know, coming across another one of our alumni doing spectacular things. So it's a matter of just keeping up with them, really.
Gotcha.
So that covers a lot of the marketing work. And on the development side, it's everything from grant writing to fundraising in all facets of it, and coming up with new initiatives for how to really connect with the local, our local community in Stanton and around Augusta County. So for an example, a new program we kicked off this year are something we call scholarship teams. So for some of our loyal local supporters who have really, you know, been with the Institute since day one, since the Institute moved to Stanton, helping them, sort of fostering this initiative of building up teams of 10 or so individuals or 10 or so couples to come up with scholarship funds for either half scholarship or full scholarship to sponsor a student. And they're sort of adopting the student for their time in Stanton during the summer. Mm. So they're part of a meet and greet when the student arrives. And, you know, they'll sort of keep up with them throughout. They'll be able to attend some of the private lessons and chamber music coachings that the student takes part in. At the end of the Institute, they'll also host a little private house concert where the student will perform. So it's a way, you know, we thought it would just be a fun idea to try something new and see how it would, you know, see what kind of interest there would be locally. And it's totally taken off. I mean, the people that have sort of signed on for this first year of it, they're so excited about the idea. And these are folks who have supported the Institute in the past, mm-hmm. but this concept of not supporting just the Institute, but supporting a single individual. Mm. And, you know, some of these young musicians are traveling from across the world. So the fact that they're, you know, say coming from South Korea and ending up in Stanton, Virginia,
yes.
and they've got this crew of people who are like just so excited to see them and welcome them and literally take them into their homes for times and show them around. I mean, it's really wonderful. So there's just so much potential to continue to tap into with things like that. So just keeping an open ear and getting, you know, receiving feedback from the community as to what we could do to just continue to be a solid contributor to the arts and do everything we can on that front.
Fantastic. All right, we're going to take a short break. We're having a marvelous conversation with Andrew Green, the Development and Marketing Manager of the Heifetz International Music Institute in Stanton, Virginia. And we're going to be right back. We're going to talk to him more about some of the growth like YouTube and the things that are going on there. And, of course, the concerts and how the number of students and faculty and staff are growing. Everything's expanding, it seems. And that must come from development and marketing. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Andrew Green.
And now, enjoy Watch Fire Music, featuring vocal artist Julia Wade singing Beautiful, from her new CD, Sunday Morning.
Oh, sing unto the Lord a new song. Sing unto the Lord all the earth. For the Lord is great and greatly to be praised.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices Radio News Program. My guest today is Andrew Green, the new Development and Marketing Manager for the Heifetz International Music Institute in Stanton, Virginia. We've been talking a lot about you, and I do think your your background in music, of your discipline of music, your particular type of music, kind of really warms you to, especially since you've been on the road, to be able to appreciate and to glean and build on the Heifetz, making certain that the musicians they train are not just technically excellent, but are also open to and able to express their emotions through themselves as well as through their music. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. And in that sense, it's cemented that concept in my mind. And same thing I love about jazz, you know, great players, there is an expectation of a technical mastery, but man, without the emotion and the passion behind it, that music can just get real cold real quickly. And
exactly.
The great players that, you know, I didn't necessarily grow up listening to jazz either. It took me a while to come to it, and it was really through those, I think looking back in retrospect, those most emotive composers and musicians, people like Monk, people like Mingus, you know, Coltrane and Miles. That was my entry into getting into that music.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's so much, not cliche to say, but just so much soul behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And now kind of in some ways I'm going through that same entryway into the much deeper into the classical music world than I've ever been before. And just everything about the music that the Institute presents, what they choose to teach and what they choose to present at shows, is that idea of that emotion and conveying that to the audience is first and foremost. If there's a piece that's not going to allow the performers to really tap into that, that piece is going to get cut from the program, whether it's the piece's fault, whether it's the performer's fault. I mean, you know, it's pretty ruthless if it's not a, you know, I've helped put together, just in print, not actually in the programming, but say, you know, here's the program, we've got to print up for tonight, so I'll lay it out on the paper. I get a call, you know, the morning of, they say, you know what, this piece is out, not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Not resonating. So, you know, I love that idea that even though it's a centuries-old tradition, it's almost like nothing is precious. You know, everything is up for interpretation and reexamination, and really with that goal of having this really intense connection, intense emotional moment with an audience. And that even goes down to the smallest details of how, you know, performers are kind of helped and coached along the way, how to walk on stage.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to take movement classes, freedom of expression. So just, it's very pragmatic in a lot of ways.
Yes.
It's just, if you want to achieve this goal of generating this moment on a stage, here's how to get there. It's not this divine secret. Here are some things you can do to get there, to really further yourself and ultimately your career as a musician, because that's what's going to separate the people who have the talent, but maybe not that flame to being these people that are, you know, I'm watching it from some of our recent alumni. They're really becoming the next generation of stars in the field.
Yes, and breathing new fresh air into classical music, which is not always been, as I think I mentioned in my experience in the last segment, it's not always been pulsating with emotion. The music was
sure
beautiful, but you need the artist to be a part of and engulfed in the music. But anyway, what about...
Yeah, and
go ahead.
I was just going to say, that really all goes back to Daniel Heifetz. I mean, that's how
yes.
he approached it. And that was his vision for starting the Institute. And, you know, I think he looked around at the landscape of classical music and dwindling audiences and says, well, it's not the audience's fault, it's
yes.
the star's fault,
yes.
it's the performer's fault, so let's do something about this. Let's not complain about it. Let's bring the audiences back in. Let's re-energize them. Let's awaken a new generation of classical music fans through showing that this is energetic, passionate, emotional music.
Exactly. And I loved my conversation with Daniel Heifetz about that. Tell us about the YouTube. Is it new? And whether it is or not, tell us about it.
It's not new, but it's the kind of thing that takes a while to build up. And so maybe what's new is the fact that it's starting to really reach this saturation point of becoming a bit of a phenomenon in the classical music world, in the digital online space. Really, one of what I would say my impression coming on board to the Institute back in December, from my perspective, one of the savviest moves that was made by the management was to really invest heavily in the multimedia production.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just hoping someone has an iPhone and is capturing or maybe setting up a GoPro on the side of the stage. I mean, full on multimedia production. We have a wonderful team who does that. One main guy, the director, his name is Matt Sorrentino. He lives out in Charlottesville. Very talented audio and video engineer. So he kind of works with us year-round, but then he leads a team that swells over the summer season to really capture all this content. And so when I came on board and started to familiarize myself with the kind of stuff that was posted on the YouTube channel and getting a sense of what's popular, what sort of things are catching on, you know, I could see it was a really nice library that they had built up.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started going back through these hard drives and said, oh my God, what we've got posted is like literally just scratching the surface. I mean, they capture everything. And there's this kind of philosophy that the capture is cheap. You know, we've got hard drive space, so just get it all out there. Mm-hmm. And Ben and the others really have a great eye and a great ear. When you're in the room for a special performance, you kind of know it. So, you know, we'll bookmark those and come back to them, and those are the ones that are going to get edited down and curated and posted. So part of the whole, you know, YouTube and social media game, it's sticking with it. It's just getting a lot of good content up there. In the same way I was saying before, how I don't really have to work too hard to fabricate these interesting stories to share about what our students and alumni are doing. The students and the faculty are doing all the work of creating the content for us. You know, it's just a matter of getting it out there. And it's certainly within the Summer Institute and the music festival sphere, you know, among our peer institutions. From what I've seen, there's no other one really invested to the extent that we have in capturing this. And it's a wonderful asset for our students, too. Many of our students who I mentioned that have gone on and are continuing to build up, I mean, truly, truly impressive careers playing with you know, string quartets and orchestras worldwide. When you go to their own websites, often what they'll have are the Heifetz videos posted because they've yet to get a better video than what they got when they were a 19-year-old playing with Heifetz because of that investment, because of that priority that we've placed on capturing this stuff. And it's an acknowledgement that's so much of where that space is going. You know,
yes.
If you want to build the reputation and the notoriety, that's the way to do it. And, you know, just anecdotally, you know, you can look at the numbers, you can look at the increase in the percentage of views and all that, and it's great, it's really important, they're great analytics to have. But one of our kind of recent prize students who's going to be coming back to the Institute once again this summer and joined us for a number of Heifetz on tour performances recently, Dominic Lee, who's a cellist from New Zealand, he talks about, you know, he meets other performers out at festivals out there who heard of Heifetz solely because they happen to catch a YouTube video of one of our performers. So it really, you know, it's reinvesting back. It's paying dividends for the Institute itself because it's helping to attract some of these next generation of great students. So it just, not only does it get the word out to other fans, but it's just building up the stature and the reputation within the music community as well.
Fantastic. It really is. I mean, well, tell us, because a lot of your programs are expanding, especially this summer, 2019. The number of concerts, is that's up as well? Tell us about all this expansion, Mr. Development Director.
So one of the really exciting things for the summer, there's going to be two new programs. They're sort of in their pilot testing year. One is we've added, finally, the rest of the string instrument family. We'll have double basses for the first time on campus. So we've got Samuel Suggs, who's a wonderful, wonderful young bass player, can truly do anything. I've got friends in the jazz world as well, who, when I told them that Sam Suggs was on board, they said, oh, I've done jazz gigs with Sam. I didn't even know he does classical music. He's going to be leading that. He's at James Madison University right in Harrisonburg. And then, very exciting, we're going to be offering a Baroque vocal workshop.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be led by David Stern and Dominique LaBelle. We've got 11 students who are going to come and really study the masterworks of Baroque vocal music, opera music, and that's going to culminate in a performance of arias by Handel at the Blackfriars Playhouse, the American Shakespeare Center, which is very cool because actually part of their summer programming is they're going to be performing Julius Caesar, and we'll be performing arias from Julius Caesar.
Yes.
So there's a lot of good synergy between the two institutions, as there are always, really always is. They're a very, very great partner institution for them, and we've been presenting concerts at their Blackfriars Playhouse for a number of years, and we'll be continuing to do so this summer. And that's just part of the Festival of Concert Season, which runs parallel to the Institute. So as we've kind of been talking around this whole time, the training that the students receive at the Institute, sort of three pillars. The first is the instrument training, which is going to be from really some of the top faculty in the world, conservatories all over the world. Then that performance and communication training, which are going to cover modules, like I said, and everything from public speaking and voice training and freedom of expression and health and wellness. So all that kind of that secret special sauce that's going to take you from being a great player to being a truly expressive, masterful performer. And then the final piece of it, in order for those two things to really gel, you've got to perform.
Yes.
Again, the whole point is not to do this in a practice room, it's to do it on a stage in front of people. So we provide just really a myriad of performance opportunities, and this year we're looking at 46 concerts over the 6-week period, and that's really how we engage and connect with our local community. It's really, we like to think of this incredible resource. I believe offhand I think 14 of the 46 concerts are free.
Yes.
And we program in a number of different venues, so you can get everything from sort of the traditional concert hall experience to a free afternoon matinee show in a local church. We do house concerts. We do outdoor concerts. So it's really also rethinking the idea of what a classical music concert is at its core. I mean, it doesn't have to be in just one kind of place. It's really music that can be presented and enjoyed everywhere by hopefully as wide a diverse group of people as we can pull in from our community.
Fabulous. We should probably, because we're running out of time, but let's give some website information where people can get tickets and also find out which concerts are indeed admission free. And then I want to talk a bit about, you're still at Baldwin, right?
Yes, Mary Baldwin University.
Okay. Correct. Remind us of the website and how we buy tickets and how we learn more about the Heifetz.
So you can go to heifetzinstitute.org, and that's HEIFETZ, and now we'll have all the information. We've got the Festival of Concerts calendar posted up there. Tickets are on sale for all 46 shows now. You can make your reservations. Most of the venues you're able to buy and reserve a specific seat, which is also a new thing. That's going to have kind of the latest and greatest news. You can sign up for our email newsletter. Throughout the festival season, we'll be sending updates and different sort of ticket offers and just late-breaking news. So, you know, be sure to sign up for the mailing list there. And, yeah, I would say just get on there. If you're local to the Central Virginia area and haven't been to a show yet, you absolutely got to do it. If you're a little further afield, if you're in the D.C. area, it's a pretty easy 2-2.5-hour trip down to Stanton, and it's another world. It's,
yes.
You know, if you haven't been to Stanton, then you really owe it to yourself. It's a very, very special little place. And I think it's part of what makes the Institute special is really that setting. It's just a stunning, beautiful little mountain town and just wonderful local businesses. And there's a ton of support for the Institute locally and vice versa. You know, we bring in, we're going to have, I think, 168 students this year, plus 70-something faculty and 30-something staff. So, you know, we bring in our own little village for the summer who just loves being there, and they support the local businesses, and the parents of the students come and stay at the local hotels. So it's, we're lucky to be part of such a supportive and thriving local community and economy down there.
And, you know, I think also with 78 faculty coming in for the summer and I think 168 students, that's quite a remarkable ratio, yes?
It really is, yeah. And another thing that many of our students really enjoy is the focus of both the training and the performances are really all on solo work and chamber works. Mm. So, you know, while orchestral training is great, and there's, you know, other institutions that do offer great access to that, that's really not what we do, and mm-hmm. we've really specialized in these smaller ensembles. So every single student there is really getting a chance to engage in these small and solo ensembles. And, you know, for a lot of people, that's where their preference and their passion is. So when it comes to that type of training and performance, we're really second to none, I believe. And that's also reflected in the faculty we bring in for that. You know, we're bringing in the specialists
yes.
for that. And kind of the embodiment of that is the Ashkenazi Kirschbaum Chamber Music Seminar that we offer. And that's for this year. There'll be 11 students who are enrolled and will be attending tuition-free. That was an important measure taken by the Institute last year to offer full scholarships for those really elite students.
Mm-hmm.
And they're here, they're going to be at the Institute really only focused on the chamber works. And then we have kind
wow.
of our Tuesday night concert offerings are going to be mostly focused on those performers and that repertoire.
Fabulous. All right, Andrew, I'm sorry that we have to go. This has been amazing. We've been finding out all about Andrew Green, the development and marketing manager, and more about all the expansion and growth and beautiful development at the Heifetz International Music Institute. My best to everyone there, and my apologies to Jennifer, who I neglected to mention, but you mentioned her, Andrew, so she is not forgotten. She is a marvelous asset at the Institute, as are Ben Rowe and Nick Kitchen, and of course Daniel Heifetz, and you, Andrew Green. Thank you so very much for being on the show. We really appreciate you and all that the Heifetz Institute brings to our humanity. And it is worth the drive. I live in Washington, D.C., and I've made the drive to Stanton. It's a beautiful drive, and what waits for you in this summer at the Heifetz Institute is more than worth the drive. Thank you so much, Andrew Green. We wish you all the very best.
Thank you, Marcello, and we hope you'll join us again this summer. Just let us know.
My pleasure. Also, before we go, one more time, just give us that website.
Sure. That's heifetzinstitute.org. That's H-E-I-F-E-T-Z.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. We wish you all the best. See you this summer. Bye now.
Bye.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Australian director Bruce Beresford has been a well-respected director since his 1980 breakthrough film, Break a Morant. With such Oscar-recognized films as Driving Miss Daisy and Tender Mercies to his credit, it should come as no surprise that he is a master of manipulated emotion. Mao's Last Dancer tells the true story of Lee Kunsen, plucked as a child from farm life in rural China to become a state-trained ballet dancer. Lee was a part of Mao Zedong's plan to develop great athletes and artists who could demonstrate to the world the triumph of Chinese communism. He is ultimately chosen by the state to travel to America, representing the superiority of his homeland. Lee interns with the Houston Ballet Theater and becomes a star. When he decides to defect and remain in America, a potentially embarrassing major international incident looms. It's tempting to write off this film as jingoist propaganda and a manipulative tearjerker, but it is also a story well told, with great beauty in the dance and a basis in historical fact. Yes, Mao's Last Dancer is touching and magnificent entertainment. Tears do flow, and that's just fine with us. Indie Film Minute. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Memories and Memorials. Maestros and Madmen. Missives and Miracles. The Truth That Hurts. America's character decay neither began with our 2016 election, nor will end with our 2020 census and election duo. The truth that sets us free, most of America's problems have come from placing too much trust in leaders in both public and private sectors who think, act, and look like Trump Pence. So this Memorial Day weekend, may our memories of mothers memorizing faces of missing children and loved ones in uniforms snatched away let us honor all who have been subjugated by men believing themselves masters of all, promising them never again. Haunted by what's been sacrificed, who best reflects American idealism? Representative Justin Amash, Machiavellian Barr, or Madman DJT? Who suffers in the dissonance of missives tweeted to distract coal miners and manufacturing workers from broken promises, if not family farms and small businesses traded to death by a money launderer? What's trending with Trump-Pence administration for people of color, affordable health care, and women and children? Will a president allowed to evade subpoenas honor decisions of federal judges? If Justice Anthony Kennedy, Rod Rosenstein, and Robert Mueller weren't America's heroes, are we the people all that stands between American democracy and mob rule? Why are Americans at Trump rallies hypnotized into following, quoting here, an existence unmolested by the rumbling of a soul? Unquote. How does America survive McConnell's judiciary takedown, Barr's DOJ intelligence agency's invasion, and Trump's projecting his ignorance of constitutional law, particularly high crimes, misdemeanors, and treason, onto his political enemies, the American people? Before December 7, 1941, most American citizens and their elected officials had little desire to enter a Second World War, so we waited and hoped for a miracle. However, we learned while there is good in most people, some only emit moral bankruptcy. Before September 11, 2001, most American citizens and our elected officials thought oil barons and gas guzzlers more praiseworthy than Henrietta Lacks. However, Bush-Cheney-Rice-Wolfowitz mushroom cloud manipulation of both facts and Congress denied us the hard truth, except that of young 1% volunteers marching off to war for the 1%ers too big to fail or jail, depositing all of us into the Friends of Dick Cheney's 2008 Recession Club, yielding madmen making derivative memories, yearning to maximize a new Iranian chapter of memorials. In 2019, we're left engulfed in needless trade wars because of the madness of a mischievous juvenile-in-chief motivated in Roosevelt Room to master intimidation of clingers-on, magnetized by malfeasance. Memories of Fifth Avenue, the halls of Congress, city food deserts, rural neighbors without high-speed broadband, and Americans living in Puerto Rico deserted confirms our land of the free is overshadowed by a prince of darkness. However, while much of America's history has been maneuvered for personal gain by older Caucasian men, there are fewer men maddened by the fear of the 2045 missive. Muffled memories will suddenly manifest with a mighty righteousness, propelling all Native Americans, all people of color, LGBTQ, and constitutionally locked-out female Americans to lavish on any face paler than their own, bearing a penis, the same maltreatment they received from wannabe masters of greed and oppression before December 31st, 2044. But fear not, for most Americans are not petty like Trump, hypocritical as Pence, hateful as McConnell, small as Mnuchin. Most presidents don't rip children from their parents. Most VPs don't ignore Jefferson's separation of church and state wisdom. Although, admittedly, too many political clones drunk on McConnell's magic potion put party before 99% of Americans, most aren't bigots who financially honor murderers of Native Americans over lifesavers like Harriet Tubman. Now on this Memorial Day, 2019, let us ask ourselves, when will our short-term memory memorialize the bait-and-switch from Garland to Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, and adjudicate operatic mood swinger Lindsey Graham, first chair Gracely, super Hatch, and their masterly maestro Mitch McConnell? Most men are neither rapists nor pedophiles, and most in public service put their lives on the lines to save others. Most Americans, particularly teachers, first responders, and Trump-maligned FBI agents and news reporters, are pro-life for all lives, from Alpha to Omega. Most Americans never stop hoping for the best life ever for their family and friends. Most know Planned Parenthood doesn't murder anyone, and most American administrations have rarely locked children in cages. Knowing perhaps Guantanamo and Quantico notwithstanding, most Americans abhor torture, and know an extremely stable genius wouldn't make Trump's Access Hollywood tape. Most of us know when a potentially treasonous target under suspicion feels cornered and trapped. Real patriots miraculously defend America, memorializing, "Ask what you can do for your country." Thank you, and join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.